All week we will be reading from the Old Testament book of Tobit. It's a great story. I hope you get a chance to read it. We will only hear, we'll hear some long excerpts, but not the whole book. Because yesterday was a feast of the visitation, we didn't get the introduction to Tobit. So today's first reading is our first encounter with Tobit this year. Tobit is the book is named after him. And we can see from the very beginning that this story is about suffering. Well, every story is about suffering. Every great story is about suffering. If you ever notice this, the only stories that are at all interesting to us are stories in which people suffer and either overcome their suffering or grow because of their suffering, or they face the contradiction of suffering, and we learn something from it. So stories of good people who have no problems are really boring. That's why they don't become famous. So this is Tobit. Now Tobit is introduced, or he was introduced in the earlier chapter, as a good man. He's a good man. He's living in exile with his family. He's trying his best to live according to the law in a pagan culture. He even takes risks to live according to the law and to bury the dead, his fellow Jews who are murdered or executed by the government. So he's a good man. But like Job, you know, the Old Testament book of Job, Job was presented as a good man and he was reduced by all sorts of suffering. Here's Tobit. He is reduced to blindness. And it's not that some wicked person comes along and Tobit stands up as a hero to defend what is right. No, he sleeps and bird droppings settle into his eyes. It's a really humiliating way of suffering. It's like he has to be feeling like an idiot. He didn't have to sleep there under the birds, but he did. And so he ends up blind, reduced to dependence on his relatives, and in particular, dependence on his wife. She has to work hard to support the family. And this story here is a pretty typical domestic conflict. I'm sure everybody knows how this is how it works. I mean, every family has little squabbles like this. Tobit is sitting there in his self-pity, and Anna is overworked, and she gets this goat as a bonus. Tobit thinks it's stolen. She's saying, "What do you mean it's a bonus? What are you judging me for?" And then he gets angry, and then she gets angry, and then the whole thing blows up. Well, it shows that the inspired Word of God is very well aware of human nature. It's no surprise to anybody who knows human nature that people fall into self-pity and people fall into judgment and people get angry. Husbands and wives disagree about stupid things, and that's the way it is a lot of times. But this is just the beginning of the story, so it makes us cringe. It makes us shudder. Oh gosh, why did they let this go? But that's only the beginning. It's not as if the story ends with Tobit and Anna separating. What we get here is, and this is not so clear in this story, because this story focuses on the narrow experience of Tobit and his wife. But what we get in the book of Tobit is the big picture, what the scholars, the literary people might call the meta-narrative. The bigger story is that there's a lot more going on than just Tobit getting blinded and impoverished. There's distant relatives, and there's money in different places, and there's all sorts of political and social situations, and then there are angels, you know, angels come into this story. And finally, there's God, who sees it all and figures out how to make it all work out. Now, Tobit doesn't see that. And we don't see it in our life, especially when we're suffering. But that's why suffering can bear a lot of fruit, because suffering humbles us and almost forces us to open our eyes to this bigger picture. When everything is going fine and we're proud, well, we think we're the big picture. We all do this. We think the world revolves around us. And when we discover that it doesn't, and we're hurt by that or angry, then we have an opportunity. It doesn't always work, but we have an opportunity to yield to what God is doing. So that's, but we'll be seeing that all week, Tobit and his family. Suffering is, of course, at the center of Jesus' experience. He enters into the world of suffering. He deliberately takes on the contradiction of suffering. In today's gospel, which again, this comes from Holy Week, so Jesus is right at the verge of his passion. In this gospel, he faces opposition from the Pharisees and the Herodians. Now, Jesus could have avoided these things. He didn't have to suffer. Unlike the rest of us, he didn't have to suffer. We have to suffer because we live in a fallen world, but he's the Son of God. Second person of the Trinity. We reflected on him on Sunday as being the perfect Son of the perfect Father in perfect eternity. That's why some people think that the Trinity is boring, because it's nothing happens. Just all love, 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 and everybody's happy. Well, of course, that's our narrow misunderstanding of love. But Jesus, Son of God, coming out of eternal glory, enters into a fallen world, and he runs into people like the Pharisees and the Herodians, who are out to get him. They're already determined to ensnare him. They're not asking a question to find out the truth. They're asking a question to trap him. This question is about paying the census tax that was imposed by the Roman government. Now, Pharisees were familiar with. They were the righteous ones. They were the holy people. And we know Jesus had lots of run-ins with Pharisees. Herodians are not that significant in the Gospels. They don't show up that much, and it's not even that clear who they are. They're certainly connected to King Herod. They seem to be a kind of political faction, and they only show up when the Pharisees want their help, at least in the Gospels. I don't know more about them. But the Pharisees seem to go to the Herodians and say, help us get this guy. That's what it looks like. And here, the Pharisees know the law, and they know if they can make Jesus speak against the law, they can trap him, but they're never successful. So they come up with this trap that has both a religious and a political dimension, and the Herodians are out to catch any political misstep. So the question is paying tax to Caesar. The Pharisees, being very righteous Jews, would say, well, why should we submit ourselves to this pagan oppressor? Doesn't mean they don't pay their taxes, they probably did, but the principle is that we should resist. The Herodians uphold the political order, and they would say, no, you should pay your taxes. If you're going to be a citizen, pay your taxes. Doesn't matter what religion you are. So if Jesus speaks against paying the taxes, the Herodians will catch him. If he speaks for paying the taxes, the Pharisees will catch him, and that's a perfect trap, or so it seems. Jesus, you gotta love these things. He walks through the most complicated circumstances, and it's like when he was in Nazareth and the crowd was going to throw him over the cliff. It's like the end. He just walks right through it. He's not trapped. So he tells them, show me a coin. A denarius was a coin, a common coin. Implying he didn't have any money. He was poor. The Pharisees considered Roman money to be a defilement. So they would officially would not have held any Roman money because it had an image of Caesar on it. And graven images were against the law. So you don't, it's a kind of idolatry to have money with graven images. So the Pharisees don't have any money. Good thing the Herodians are there because they have money and they pull out a coin. But you see what Jesus does here. He exposes the Pharisees. He doesn't have to expose the Herodians because they're not interested in being good. They're just going along for the political intrigue here. The Pharisees are the ones who are the problem because they think they're good and Jesus is bad and they have to trap him and get rid of him. So what he does here is exposes before the Pharisees that they too are members of the civil society. For all their self-righteousness, they still pay their taxes. Because that's what you have to do as a citizen. We pay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, you Pharisees. You're trying to trap me into paying taxes. You pay them. And it's not wrong. That's what he's doing here. So telling people to pay their taxes is not as revolutionary as the Pharisees think it's going to be. This is what you do. If you're a citizen, you pay your taxes. But then Jesus adds this second part, which puts everything in right perspective. We pay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but to God what belongs to God. You Herodians, you Pharisees, and everybody, we are creatures. We belong to God. We are to give God what is his due. We belong to God. No one has absolute authority over anyone else. Political authorities, religious authorities are all under God. Systems of taxation, systems of political, religious observance, all under God. So if you want to get the meta-narrative, if you want to get the big picture, you have to do it in the light of God, God's will. So we understand paying taxes is part of the will of God. We might feel like complaining about it, but and we know that not all of our tax money goes to good things. Some of it goes into the pockets of corrupt officials. That's the risk you take. But it doesn't mean that we can't pay, that we don't pay taxes. Give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. But do it because you belong to God. Caesar belongs to God. The Pharisees belong to God. The Herodians belong to God. We belong to God. The parish belongs to God. The barangay belongs to God. Everything belongs to God. Get it straight. We should never think that there's an area of life that is independent of God. Going back to suffering and Tobit, this is what Tobit has to learn. Just because he's blind now, just because he's humiliated and he's dependent, it doesn't mean that he can take charge and make a judgment on his life. It doesn't mean that his perception of what is stolen or what is just is correct. He has to submit to God. So does Anna. So does their son Tobiah. And so do all of us. So we're being given some instructions in justice here, but the root of justice is all in our submission to God. Give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, but to God what belongs to God. We rejoice to be children of God. We're privileged to know God. This is what we celebrated on Sunday, the Trinity. What an extraordinary gift it is to be able to know God and to live as His children.